Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I am your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Sydney, I've done it.
Oh no, you've done what?
I've done it. I've finally found the exact right amount of Downy Fresh Unstoppables to add to my laundry to get the perfect blend of scent longevity versus freshness impact.
Now, one quick question.
Yes.
What is this? The Downy
Fresh Unstoppables. Yes, Sydney.
What are those? I don't even know which to use a plural or a singular noun. What is this product?
For those of us who do laundry, Downy Fresh Unstoppables is a it's sort of like crystals that you can include with your laundry during the wash cycle to up the freshness.
Just to clarify, this is not an ad. Justin's really just telling you about this.
This is how the Downy Fresh Unstoppables work. Now, the problem with Downy Fresh Unstoppables is that in the directions, they say you can add up to... They're just little crystals. Like, they're little crystals, right?
Okay. So, and you, do you put that in the washer or the dryer?
In the washer. So
okay. The washer's the wet one
that
you put the clothes in first.
I don't think you have to do laundry to know that washing is wet, but this is an okay bit, I guess. Anyway...
I really don't do laundry.
Not a bit.
Ever. Justin does all the laundry.
Thank you for acknowledging that. Yes. So you add, on the directions of the Downy Fresh Unstoppables, it says you can add up to the fill line on the cap. You can add that much or add as much as you want. Okay, Downy Fresh Unstoppables.
So how have you been experimenting with this?
I'm mainly experimenting on myself with my own garments because I don't want to put you at risk of too much freshness and overabundance of freshness. So with my shirts, my shorts, and my mentionables, through rigorous tests varying in longevity of wear, amount of crystals, And a few other factors, I have finally calculated by experimenting on my own clothes exactly the right amount of Downy Fresh Unstoppables to include.
How did you figure out if you were fresh or not? Like, did you ask people, like, how fresh do you think I smell?
The problem is you can't.
Because you haven't been asking me.
You can't ask them in the moment is the thing, because everybody in the moment thinks things smell fresh. You got to have to ask them the next day. Do you remember yesterday me... anybody being particularly fresh.
Now, here's my question, though. Okay. You don't leave the house much.
Not much,
Most days, you only see me and our cats. So who were you
The answer to the question you're building towards is the mailman. But, yes, through experimentation, I have calculated...
We're going to have to tip him well this Christmas.
I have calculated the exact amount of Downy Fresh Unstoppables to include with my laundry.
I'm proud of you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
If Downy wants to offer us any money for that...
that extended plug.
We'd welcome it. Did you know that you were following in like a proud scientific tradition with this self-experimentation?
I did not.
Well, that's the case. Would you like to hear about some other actual doctors, not just honorary doctors
laundry doctors like myself?
Who may be engaged in some of a little bit of self-research of their own?
I can't imagine how their accomplishments will sort of compare to what I've done here. So I guess I would like to hear about
it. Sure. Well, we're going to start with Walter Reed. So that may be,
he sounds okay.
yeah, you may have heard of him. And I'd just like to mention that the topic for this episode was actually inspired by one of our listeners. Ken suggested it.
He is a doctor that does experiments on himself.
I don't think.
Cheese it, Ken.
I don't think Ken is. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe he is. I don't know. But he suggested Walter Reed, and this gave birth to the rest of this topic. So thank you, Ken. Now, a lot of people have heard of Walter Reed.
Yeah, he's got that hospital.
Exactly, because of the hospital. So Walter Reed was a person before he was a hospital.
That's good. You don't want to reverse that. It could be very underwhelming.
No, he was a...
I'm going to name my kid after this hospital.
The nation's first transformer. Now he's a hospital.
Oh, no, he changed with everybody inside. Not again. Oh, God, there's blood everywhere. Our veterans.
That would not make him a very good doctor.
Like the worst doctor.
So he got his MD from the University of Virginia when he was 18 years old.
Wow. Nice job, Walter.
Yeah, he is still the youngest person ever to receive an MD from that school.
Doogie. It could have been Doogie House or Hospital.
When you look at it that way, though, wasn't Doogie like 15 or 14? Yeah,
Doogie's like way better than Walter Reed.
Yeah, so still no comparison really there.
Yeah, Doogie's legacy is safe.
Where is that hospital?
Doogie Howser Hospital.
Doogie Howser Hospital.
I'd go. I'd drive a distance.
So because he was so young when he graduated from medical school, he actually had a lot of trouble kind of getting a good job. A lot of people wouldn't take him seriously. So he knew he was a bright guy. He knew that he was destined for greatness. But nobody wanted to hire him to do anything great because he was 18. And everybody's like, hey, what does that young kid know about medicine? Get out of here.
A wunderkind running Look at around him with making his, him feel old.
No, with his yo-yo and his bubble gum.
it's Archie Comics.
Forget that guy. So he decided, I need some opportunity. I'm young. I need some adventure. He joined the army and he went west, young man. And this was a good move for him because he traveled out west. He studied a lot of bacteriology and epidemiology as a result of some of the typhoid outbreaks that he worked with. So he became...
Real quick, what's epidemiology?
Like the study of disease spread, like epidemics, like the study of disease spread. So okay. Kind of...
Not related to epidermis.
No. The study of how, like, they always have epidemiologists at health departments or at the CDC to study where an outbreak started and how it spread and how we can stop it, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So he did a lot of research with typhoid and he made kind of a name for himself doing this kind of stuff. Which is why the thing we know him best for is the Yellow Fever Commission, which he was asked to lead by the U.S. government.
Very prestigious.
Yes, it was very prestigious because this was a big deal. There were a lot of U.S. soldiers down in Cuba, and they were dying in huge numbers from yellow fever, which is a terrible hemorrhagic virus, hemorrhagic fever that will... that kills large numbers of people and makes you bleed and throw up black stuff, and it's really terrible.
That sounds terrible.
So actually, it was, yeah, it was pretty vicious. We didn't know how people were getting it. We just knew that all of them were. We didn't know how to cure it or fix it or fight it. So basically, the government said, hey, Walter Reed, you know about this stuff. Why don't you go down, head up a commission, get some doctor buddies, and try to figure out what the heck's going on with this yellow fever thing.
Gross. You got to be really devoted to go down where yellow fever's popping.
Well, and he didn't exactly go down right away.
Kind of stalled.
He kind of put together a team.
Oof, Mad Men finale coming up. Can't really get down there right now, but I will definitely, once that mid-season finale pops off, I think I got a few months to get down there, just like really get deep. But Donnie D, Roger, all the gang, got to see how that shakes out for all them. So I cannot get down there right now. Apologize.
You're really jonesing to watch that episode of Mad Men we have on DVR, aren't you?
Yeah, it was top of mind.
Sorry. So he, and the reason I mentioned that he wasn't down there initially is not to make him sound like a wimpy guy or, you know, it was purely because the first phase of the research and trials that they did, he really didn't have a big hand in, which I think he would appreciate us mentioning when I tell you what they did. So he thought, this was his basis, he thought that the yellow fever virus was probably mosquito-borne.
Is that right?
Yes, meaning that you got it from the bite of a mosquito. This was absolutely right. This was actually postulated by a Dr. Carlos Finley, who had written about it, and Walter Reed had and gave him credit for you know, kind of taken this idea and said, I think this guy's got the right idea. He set up a group of researchers, a couple famous doctors from the time. There was a Dr. Jesse Lazier, James Carroll, Aristides Agramonte, which I only mentioned because that is his name.
That is such a good name.
Right? Yeah, he doesn't feature largely in the rest of the story, but that's his name. I'm glad he could
dip in for that, though. I do. I really appreciate it.
I added him to the list just for that reason. So they all took off, and he kind of set them up and said, look, I really think that the mosquitoes are spreading it. Why don't you do some research, figure it out, come up with some trials. You guys are smart doctors. You can figure this stuff out. I'll be down there soon. Just get started. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got everything in place.
If any of you gets yellow fever, give me just a real quick call. I'll see if I can't push that fly back a little bit.
Send me a telegram. So they set up the initial phase of experiments. And the thing is that most of them weren't on board with the whole mosquito theory. They really didn't buy it. They thought, you know what? This probably has something to do with water, or maybe it spread through the air. We don't really know, but this mosquito thing seems a little wacky. So let's just get it out of the way. Let's just do that part of the trial really fast, prove it's not mosquitoes, and then we can move on with the real research.
Okay.
So the easiest thing to do is try it out on ourselves.
Sorry?
So they wanted to see if they could infect themselves with yellow fever using mosquitoes.
That seems reckless.
A little.
A tad reckless.
Plus, you have to get bitten by a mosquito, which is, like, not fun.
I bet it is annoyingly difficult to get bitten by a mosquito when you want to. You know? They're there when you don't. But I bet if you're like, come on, I'm delicious. I bet they are really annoying about it.
There were later studies done on malaria that kind of are like you're describing, where they would just, like, have guys sit outside and wait to get bitten by mosquitoes. Rubbed in
butter and paprika.
just sit here and let's count how often you get bitten by a mosquito. Don't move. Don't slap them.
Just let them drink.
Now, that's not...
That'd be the hard part. Just, yeah, go on, nope. Little buddy. Get in there.
Just take your fill. Ugh. So that's not how they did this. They rigged this.
Hey, Daryl, you got to get out of here. There's this jerk. He's just in a chair. You can just go drink. He won't do anything.
It just sits there.
It just sits there. I swear to God.
There's another guy with a clipboard who just checks a box every time you do it.
I'll never figure these guys out. Oh, well, come on. I'm stuffed.
So they wanted to make sure they got that if they were going to be able to get infected by a mosquito, they wanted to make sure that they did it right. So what they did is they would take a mosquito in like a little test tube or glass vial and invert it on the arm of a sick person. So that basically the mosquito is trapped between the skin of the sick person and the glass vial.
Okay.
You get what I'm saying? Yeah. Can you picture that?
Yeah.
And then they would let the mosquito, you know, take a blood meal from the person. So at that point, if it can be transmitted through mosquito, the mosquito should have yellow fever, right? Or should be carrying it, not have it, not like sick from yellow fever. The mosquito isn't puking. But it's got yellow fever. So then you take that same vial and you invert it on the arm of a healthy person and let it drink their blood.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because when a mosquito takes blood, it also injects some of its saliva into the person, and so you're going to get the yellow fever from the mosquito.
Okay.
So they just went ahead and you know, got the mosquitoes to bite sick people and then bite them. And initially, nobody really got sick.
They were excited. They're like, well, finally we can move on to the water theory.
Exactly. At first they were like, hey, this is looking pretty good, you know, like we're not getting sick, so we think this is probably, you know, this theory's no good. We're gonna try a few more people. They were good scientists, they knew what they were doing. We're gonna try a few more people before we say no. And then one of them got sick. James Carroll, one of the lead researchers, got really sick. So did one of the young privates that they worked with. They had a lot of volunteers from the army, and they both got pretty sick.
It seems like kind of a reckless use of our fighting men.
Hey, come let me infect you with that's yellow like fever. One, or try to.
That's like the duty they give you when you can't even peel potatoes, right? Okay, we do have one job. Ugh, fine. Go work with Walter Reed.
I bring up malaria again because later we probably did not necessarily do experiments with our fighting men and women, mainly men during the time period, with malaria, but we definitely experimented with all kinds of treatments for it on them.
Can I ask, this may be a stupid question, But is yellow fever treatable?
Yes, it's treatable. It's not curable, but it's treatable. But it's supportive treatment.
So these guys were just giving themselves an incurable disease?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes. And that was the thing at the time, is that one of the motivations, why would people have done this, is the perception was that if you lived there or you were stationed there, you were going to get yellow fever. So if you were going to get it, at least you're under the care of the United States military when you get it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just out in the bush somewhere.
You could probably work a medal out of it.
So, well, and all of these men, I should note, are remembered mainly for their bravery in doing this experiment.
I think they were just being a jerk. They just were trying to rub it in Walter Reed's face. Like, this is not the, these are not the acts of sane men. These are men that are trying to rub it in the face of their nerdy friend, Walter. Yeah, Walter. They'll stuff him in a gym locker, and then they make him watch as they put mosquitoes on their arm. Look at him. He's biting me. Oh, Walter, it's terrible. Save me, Walter.
Look at him. His white coat doesn't fit. The sleeves are too long, and he's wearing those sneakers all the time. Jerk.
We tied his shoelaces together. What an idiot. Oh, God. Yeah, I don't feel so good. How do you guys feel?
No, they didn't feel so good. So once Carol got sick, Dr. Lazier was actually one of the lead researchers, and who knows what he was thinking at this point. So he sees his friend James Carroll get sick, almost die, didn't die, but got really sick. And then this young private also got sick. He had already attempted to infect himself once, right? He'd already put himself through this trial. Who knows why? I don't know if he felt guilty because his friend got sick, because he was crazy, stupid.
Because Carol was getting all the attention.
Maybe.
That's what it was.
Maybe.
It was bringing him chicken soup.
All the ladies were visiting him. And yeah. Like, oh, Jimmy, I hope you feel better soon.
I could get you a fever too. It's no big deal.
So he decided to try it again. And depending on how you look at it, he succeeded. He got yellow fever.
Okay.
He got super sick. And unfortunately, he died. Which, from what you read, is listed as a successful trial.
That is a, oh man.
Now
that's such a bummer.
It is a bummer. And it should be noted.
I was just making jokes. Why did you let me, you wrote this. How could you let me make, remember he tied his shoelaces together and all that stuff. I made him sound like a jerk. How could you do this to me?
How did you not see this coming? They were giving themselves yellow fever. It's a hemorrhagic fever. Somebody was going to die.
I barely think like two moves ahead here, Sydney. I can't calculate all the possible endings.
So at this point, Walter came back down from the U.S. and was like, what are you people doing? I give you one task. Find out
you
if there's yellow
so
fever
bad.
And mosquitoes.
You all gave yourself yellow fever.
And now my buddy Jesse's dead. James is still in bed. This is terrible.
God, do all this myself. Ugh.
So he took over at that point with the second and third phases of the trials, which mainly involved getting volunteers to do it instead. And how could you persuade people to volunteer? Well, you could always, like I mentioned, they were using people in the military. And so you could call on a soldier's sense of duty and courage and honor and responsibility to his country. And again, the fact that you're probably going to get this anyway. So that was one angle. The other, I think, a little more straightforward and applies to today, you just pay them.
Okay.
And those were largely not soldiers who were paid. They were just locals.
Okay.
Members of the community. And so they would offer you a flat rate, depending on which source you look at, somewhere between 100 and 300 in gold to submit yourself to the experiment. And then you got extra if you actually got yellow fever.
Oh, nice.
So somewhere between 2 and 500. That doesn't sound like a lot to infect yourself with a potentially deadly virus, except that's like between $8,000 and $20,000 in today's money.
And it's in gold.
Yes. That's like a lot of money.
Which is way cooler.
It's like $20,000 if you get yellow fever. Plus, again, the thought at the time was that if you were new to the area, you were going to get yellow fever sooner or later. You didn't have access to a lot of medical care unless you were part of this experiment. And then you had all of the army doctors who were, you know, taking care of you, measuring every fluid that went in and out of your body, doing research on you, but also trying to make you better.
So how did it all shake out?
All said, there were 29 people who got sick from this experiment, and 5 of them unfortunately died, including the only woman who volunteered.
So were... I mean, Did they solve it? I mean, did they get what they need out of it?
Exactly. They proved that it was mosquito-borne. And, you know, Walter Reed went on to have a hospital named after him. Mm-hmm. So clearly he's remembered well. And I should say, again, do I think that there was courage and bravery in their actions? Sure, I think that's part of it. I think that was very honorable. I think there was also a little bit of arrogance. And then I think they paid a lot of people, and you can pay people to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So there's the truth behind the Yellow Fever Commission.
So who's next?
So along this theme, I wanted to share a couple other pioneers in the field of self-experimentation. Max Joseph von Pettenkofer, another great name. I don't know if it's all the way up there with Agramonte. That name
smells like Lederhosen to me.
So he was Bavarian born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, right there.
He was an MD. He was born in 1818. He was an MD and a chemist. And his area of interest was hygiene. So he actually taught hygiene, and he studied a great deal what was the effect of the quality of water and food and air and how clean people's clothes were in their houses on their health, mm-hmm. which is an important area.
Especially at that time.
Yes, and very relevant to people's health then right. and now. So he lived in Munich, and this was important because there was a cholera outbreak there in the 1880s and 1890s. And he was studying that. Now, the commonly held theory, because of Koch, of postulate fame, Robert Koch, Koch's postulate,
okay. Yeah,
okay. We're talking about germ theory of disease kind of stuff.
I remember you got very excited about Koch.
Yeah. Well, I like to say of postulate fame, which, again, that's one of those things where there are, like, biology majors snickering, and you're just staring at you. You're giving
nice
me that
one,
look.
Sid.
So he had recently discovered the bacteria that caused cholera. So they knew it was from bacteria. Mm-hmm. We're not guessing where it came from at this point. Except for Max. He didn't buy it.
No?
He thought, okay, that's fine. So you found the bacteria, it spreads cholera. But it's more than that. Because he saw cholera so closely linked with people who kind of just were dirty. That was his perception. Dirty people got cholera. He thought there was more to it. Well, but maybe you can get the bacteria, but you can only really get sick and get the disease if you're not clean, if you don't wash, if you live in a dirty house, if you don't take care of yourself, basically.
Which is interesting and kind of backwards from the way we understand things today. I mean, those are contributing factors, but once you found the bacteria, that's usually it, right?
Exactly. Well, if you didn't have a clean water source because you did live in a socioeconomically depressed area and you didn't have access to clean water, you were much more likely then to come in contact with the bacteria and get cholera. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the lack of cleanliness. And certainly you could be a rich, clean person who got cholera.
So how did he test this out?
So to test out this theory, he thought, what cleaner person do I know
yeah.
than Max Joseph von Pettenkofer?
White gloves all the time, brushes his teeth four times a day. I bet he was a real stickler for it.
He's a hygienist. That's his job.
He's the cleanest dude ever.
So he thought, you know what? I'm going to take that bacteria. I'm going to get it somehow. I'm going to get that bacteria in me, and I'm going to prove that I'm not going to get cholera because it's not just the bacteria. It's being dirty. So how can you best make sure that you get the cholera bacteria?
I don't know.
We'll find somebody who had cholera.
Oh, and just like hang out near them and like smooch them maybe or...
Well, do you know, this might help. Do you know what cholera causes?
No.
With how the disease manifests?
I'm sorry.
Massive diarrhea. That's the easiest way to explain it. Massive, massive, watery diarrhea until you dehydrate to death. Except now we can fix it and save your life. But back then we couldn't.
That book would not have sounded as good if it was called Love in the Time of Pooping Yourself to Death. That would not be as good of a title.
Cholera is not a romantic disease, even though people like to make it one. No, you poop yourself to death.
Okay.
Which is very sad, but...
Wait a minute.
Yeah, so where are you going to get the cholera?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Yeah, so he wanted to make sure he did it right. He didn't just find somebody who had cholera. He found somebody who died of cholera.
Uh-huh.
Got a sample of their diarrhea.
Yeah.
Mixed himself up a drink.
No, don't wait. Max Joe.
And he drank it.
No.
If it makes you feel better.
Nothing can make me feel better.
By the end of the disease.
I'm in hell.
By the end of the disease process, it actually has turned your stool into like what they describe as rice water. What, so,
has it turned it into a mojito? No, has it turned it into like, cherry Kool-Aid?
It just looks water with flecks of intestine in it. You know, it's not really, it doesn't look like poop anymore.
Bad thoughts. So how could you? I can't. Why, Max Joe? Max Joseph, please come back to me. Please.
Here's what's crazy.
What's crazy? Stick to one. I have some theories. Maybe drinking the poo-poo of a dead man. Perhaps, like my man Max Joe did. Perhaps drinking a dead man's poo-poo. That's not great. Go on. What did he do afterwards? Just ate a whole cheesecake. Just get nuts. What could he do that's going to crazier than drinking a dead man's poo-poo?
He didn't really get that sick.
Not as sick as I am right now, in one of the great ironies.
He got sick. He got diarrhea. He did become ill, but he got... What we later figured out was probably just a mild case of cholera. He probably didn't get a very high infectious dose.
Light cholera.
He got some light cholera. What he interpreted it as was, I didn't get sick, see? I got a little sick, but not that sick because I'm clean. Proven right.
I nailed it.
And he's remembered forever as a pioneer in the field of hygiene. He's on a stamp. And he drank cholera poop.
Congratulations.
And lived to tell about it. Why would you tell anybody about it?
I'd never tell anybody about it. This was discovered 2 years ago when his great-great-grandson broke the family's most dearly held secret. So who's next?
Okay, so our next...
I have to get the taste out of my mouth, if you know what I mean.
We're going to hang out in Germany, though, for this next one.
Oh, God. This is the place where he did that. I can't be here anymore.
We're fast-forwarding, though.
Okay.
Poor Max Joe died in 1901. Werner... Forsman, our next candidate, was born in 1904. So see, we're way into the future, and we're in Berlin now, where he studied and got an MD. He was focused on the idea that you could deliver medications, better image, and measure blood pressure of the heart, from the heart, if you could get a catheter directly there. So that was his interest, was how can we get a catheter directly into the heart? Because he thought that, like I said, you get a better measurement of pressure that way, and maybe we could take pictures if we inject some dye there. So heart catheterization, that was his kind of area of interest. He thought that there was a way to safely do that by accessing a vein. Mm-hmm. Most people believe that if you tried to stick something in the heart, you'd kill the person.
Yes.
Which was a fair belief. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not true. We do heart caths all the time now.
But I can see how you would think it's sensitive in there.
Sure. And he didn't buy it. He said, no, there's a way to do this. He tried to work with the chief of his department to get him, you know, hey, I want to try this out on some people. Won't you let me do this procedure? Nobody would let him. So he said, okay, well, can I try it on myself? Well, the chief of his medicine department said, no, you can't experiment on yourself. So he went and got the head OR nurse, who was in charge of supplies, and said, hey, I really want to do this thing. Will you help me out? And she agreed, but strangely, only if he would try it out on her.
I think they were in love.
Do you think they were in love?
That's what I think.
Maybe she was heroic.
Maybe she was heroic. Well, oh, you mean like literally heroic? Do you mean like heroic, like heroic medicine, or heroic like...
Just maybe she's a hero. Maybe she was like, do it. Go ahead. Cath me, doctor.
Use me
for your research.
Maybe she wasn't in love with him. Maybe he was in love with her.
Maybe she wanted to make a name for herself. Maybe she wanted to be famous.
I don't know why I feel like I have to ship everybody in medical history.
You really do. Anyways. Maybe she was just really cool and she was like, I want my name in the history books.
Maybe. She was trying to get her name in light. She saw the great success that Mac Joseph had. With his thing that he did.
And this didn't
seem... He's on a stamp.
This didn't seem nearly as bad.
Like, better. I would do this first instead. Sorry, go ahead.
So he agreed to do it, but once they got to the OR and got set up, he strapped her to the table, he numbed up her wrist, and then he proceeded to go ahead and cath himself as he had planned on doing the whole time.
Why did he numb her wrist?
So that she wouldn't know that he wasn't doing it.
Oh.
He numbed up her arm and said, now you're not going to feel anything because you're all numb.
Don't look.
I mean, the truth was she wasn't going to feel anything because he wasn't actually, you know, cathing her.
Oh, nice.
Instead, he then numbed up his own arm and passed the catheter through what's that called, the antecubital vein. It's the vein right inside your elbow.
Okay.
It's where they draw blood. Hmm. So he cathed himself, pushed the catheter in a pretty good distance toward his heart, but he wasn't sure if it was really there or not. So they had to go check in radiology. So at that point, he had to, you know, unstrap the nurse, admit to her, hey, I know your arm's numb, but there's no catheter in it, but could you help escort me downstairs to radiology so we could see where the heck this thing is that I think I've stuck in my heart? So they went down and they checked it out in radiology, and he advanced it a little further and managed to stick the catheter right into his right ventricle.
Wow. God, yeah. What a hero.
No.
No?
Not a hero. I mean, this sounds really cool. He cathed himself. He later went on, you know, that was kind of the pioneer of the procedure. A lot of people were not cool with this. The chief of medicine, the, you know, his eventual mentor
Nobody
wouldn't work
ever
with him.
Respects a hero. People are always so jealous.
They thought it was stupid. They thought it was reckless. They said, forget this. This is not how medicine is done. So he tried to find a group of people who would kind of appreciate somebody with questionable ethics. And he found them.
Oh, no.
The Nazis.
Werner.
No. So not a good guy. He joined the Nazi party. He worked as a medical officer with the Nazis. He spent some time in an American POW camp as a result.
Yeah, we got him.
But then...
What are you going to do to a man that jammed a needle in his own arm?
And cathed his own heart. I don't know. And I think what we decided to do with him eventually, strangely, was let him out of the POW camp and then honor him in medical societies across Germany, Sweden, and the U.S. He was actually a member of the American Academy of Chess Physicians.
Listen, we all did some things. We've all made mistakes.
It's a
look at Max Joseph von Pettenkofer.
It's not, I wouldn't call this a cool guy. A lot of these people I'm talking about are like cool guys who just made up some bad choices.
Yeah, this guy made some bad choices followed by some super, super duper bad choices.
So,
all right,
but he is the first person to be heart cathed.
It's enough about him.
Let's go to London.
Stupid Nazis.
Let's go to London. Let's round it out with something that I promise you is not gross at all.
Okay.
So John Hunter. Born in 1728, he was a London doctor, and at this time in London, when he was practicing medicine, it was booming. It was a city on the grow. And wherever you have industry and business and population explosions, what do you gotta have?
A lot of restaurants, I guess, a lot of infrastructure to keep up with that.
Prostitutes.
I was going to say prostitutes next.
So there were lots and lots of prostitutes there. And as a result, there was lots and lots of venereal disease. At the time, it was believed that there were pretty much two main classes of venereal disease. Syphilis and gonorrhea. The pox or the clap. And most doctors believe that you either had one, the other, or both. And they were two distinct illnesses. One was bad, gonorrhea, because it was terrible to have, but wouldn't kill you and was relatively brief, whereas syphilis was something that could kill you and was really bad. Now, John Hunter, he didn't buy this theory. He thought that it was the same disease. There's one venereal disease. Syphilis and gonorrhea are the same thing. There's just two different stages of it. You got gonorrhea first. From some sort of poison that you probably got from another person. We understood that it was kind of we kind of knew it was sexually transmitted. We had that idea. So you got some sort of poison from another person. It gave you the symptoms of gonorrhea, which was mainly local, mainly, you know, pus coming out of your privates. And then it spread to your whole system and you got syphilis.
Ooh, that's not right. Right?
That's right. It's not right. They are definitely two distinct
MBD,
diseases.
MBD, John Hunter, even I knew that. Jerk.
But he really wanted to prove this theory. But how do you prove it?
I don't know.
Well, you have to find somebody who you know with complete certainty has never had gonorrhea or syphilis and give them gonorrhea. And then you wait and see. If they only get gonorrhea, well, then they're two distinct illnesses. If they get gonorrhea and then later get syphilis, okay. Now, that's the same illness. You've proven it. But you've got to find somebody that you are 100% sure does not have either disease.
So he picked himself.
Of course.
Yeah, right.
And how to give yourself gonorrhea?
I'm not going to. No, I can't imagine, Sydney.
Well, so you get some pus from a guy who's got it. So you get some pus.
One of the more awkward conversations you can have with a stranger.
Could you give, could, would you go take this cup?
Do you have gonorrhea? I mean, so, I'm just going to get there. I was going to. Trying to come up with a cute way to ask it.
And no, he was a doctor, so he had access to people with gonorrhea.
That's a good point.
Take some of the pus and give it to yourself. Now, how to inoculate yourself most certainly to get the disease? Well, why don't you just make some superficial cuts into your own penis and then put the pus in them?
You said.
I lied.
You said it. Would it be gross and now you do this to me? Your husband, the father of your child? So how could you make me think about a guy rubbing penis pus on his own penis with gonorrhea? Gonorrhea and penis pus.
This is how he decided.
This show's supposed to be safe for children.
Gonorrhea.
This show isn't safe for anybody.
I'm not using profanity.
Yeah, you are. You're using emotional profanity. Visual profanity. That's what you're doing to me.
Predictably, he got gonorrhea.
Yeah, super gonorrhea. He got amazing super gonorrhea.
You know what's sad is that he later... Well, I mean, he got gonorrhea. That's sad enough. But he later went on to develop a characteristic syphilis chancre. I know, now you're thrown for a loop.
So wait...
A chancre is the initial... It's the initial sore that you get with syphilis. Looks kind of like an ulcer.
Uh-huh.
That's... So he developed one.
Why?
They even named it, by the way.
Really?
The Hunterian chancre for John Hunter. Oh. So he briefly had a venereal disease named after himself.
That chancre? That's named after the original one on my wiener.
That's the Hunterian chancre.
That's the Hunterian chancre you got right there.
So, okay, he's still wrong, though. Why do we know he's wrong?
I don't know.
Because we figured out that the patient had both. The patient he got the pus from had already gotten gonorrhea and syphilis.
So John.
He managed to... he was wrong. He set medicine back like half a century with this result because it took us forever to figure out what the heck happened and was he right or wrong. And he gave himself both gonorrhea and syphilis.
What a super great week for John Hunter.
So.
Oh, man.
I don't know if you call these guys brave, stupid.
It's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, I think. But I'm certainly happy to have made their acquaintance, except for half of them, which are the worst people in history that have subjected me to these things, and I'll never sleep well again.
So I think Walter Reed is the only one I'd want to sit down to dinner with, personally.
Yeah. But that's going to do it for us this week on Sawbones. We hope you've enjoyed yourself and not thrown up in your mouth, basically.
Sorry about that.
Super, super sorry about all that. Thanks to everybody tweeting about the show, like Nicole, M. Winget, Steve Spaulding, Mark Hayes, Palak Patel, Rachel, Taylor Bear, Zena, Jen Barneson, yeah, there we go, Bethany Packwood, our buddy Carrie Poppy, Blistifer, James Something, Tristan Morris, Josh Butler, Amy Chatwin, so many others. Super duper appreciate that. Please tell your followers about our show this week. You can link them to sawboneshow.com where they can find us. We're on Twitter at Sawbones. She's at Sydney McElroy, SYDNEEMCELROY.
And he's at Justin McElroy.
That's me. There are a ton of great shows just waiting for you to listen to them on the Max Fun Network. There's Jordan Jesse Go, Judge John Hodgman, Stop Podcasting Yourself. The Goose Down, Lady to Lady.
My Brother and Me.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh No, Ross and Carrie. That's Carrie Poppy there. And there's a lot of others. So you should totally listen to all of them and you'll like really enjoy it and you'll love them and you'll have a great time. There's forums too, so you can go chat about it and our episodes and all the other shows. I want to remind you, go to boatparty.biz to register for the Atlantic Ocean Comedy and Music Festival. They have, it is a cruise that is headed out this July, and you are going to be able to set sail with a boatload, a literal boatload of great comedians. It's July 25th through the 28th. They got W. Kamau Bell, Guy Branum, Tony Kamen, Chris Fairbanks, Moshe Katcher, Karen Kilgariff, Kyle Kinane. My mouth is shutting down. Morgan Murphy, Natasha Leggero, John Roderick, personal friend that I haven't met, but seems like a nice guy. That's boatparty.biz. You can go register for that. You will have the time of your life, I assure you. And everyone's name on the boat is impossible to pronounce, so you can have fun with that.
You gave it your best.
You know what? I gave it the old college try. Anyway, that's going to do it for us. We will be sure to join you next Tuesday with another episode of Sawbones. Until then, I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.